to No Filter Sports. It is May 21st, 2020. Eli Zarrett, Bob Page, Denny McClain coming at you once again. And I want to start with a little bitch today, just a little bitch that's off the subject. But I print my show every day, and we do this, and I've got 15 pages or so. And I decided ink is so expensive, I'm going to add up and see just how much it costs me. So I pay $14 for a cartridge, and I started counting every page. Well, it told me I needed to put new ink in after 110 pages. That means I'm spending 13 cents to print every page. I think printer ink is the biggest ripoff in the world. There's no way to get around it.
It is.
No way to get around it.
It is.
What's the solution?
It is. They've got a new printer out, too. I haven't seen it, but I heard about it, that it's you put in one cartridge, and then you reload the cartridge from that. Not the entire cartridge, but with the filler itself. And it's supposed to last, 10, 12, 20 times longer than the other one. But it just came out about a month ago.
And then
it reminds me of that great story, what Eli just said, about Gibby not paying his cable bill in Grosse Pointe. They cut off his service. You know this. So he goes into Grosse Pointe Cable. Gibby's the wild man.
When did this happen? Years ago.
It goes, he's wild. And he says, I can't believe you cut off my service. Everything like that. Gibby says, you know I've got the money. And the secretary says, Mr. Gibson, that's the problem. You've got the money. So I would just say, Mr. Zarrett, you've got the money. I wouldn't worry about the cost of printer ink.
So the connection there is the price of the ink?
It is. It's crazy. And so, but
Mr. Zarrett has the money.
Bob, you're going to force me to drink one day.
We're going to visit with Tom Brookins later on, a former Tiger from 1984, played here 10 years. Great guy, now retired. Could have been, maybe should have been, the Tiger manager in 2014. Jim Leland wanted Tommy to succeed him with the Tigers, but Dave Dombrowski went on to hire Brad Ausmus, and we'll talk to him about that and some of the amazing experiences he had as a Tiger, including coming up as a rookie, and then the next day was the disco demolition in Chicago. We'll talk to Tom Brookins about all those things. I saw two events on TV that were deflating as we sit in this whole coronavirus. So last week, and I watched, you ready for this, on network television, I watched a cornhole tournament, at least 10 minutes, and just...
What is that?
I watched it, too, for about 3 minutes.
Cornhole is the game that they play when they tailgate, Eli, where you throw bean bags into a hole on a little platform about 50 feet away.
But, you know, and I don't mean to take this in a bad direction, but when you hear the word cornhole, you got to look.
Let's not go there.
Of course, that was you dropping the soap in prison all those
years. easy, boy.
Let's not go there.
Don't make me start talking personally.
Okay. The other thing is, and I saw this yesterday, which would have been, I recorded it yesterday. ESPN2 showing Korean baseball.
Yeah.
And you had three announcers on the right side of the screen. You had Carl Ravitch, Eduardo Perez, I assume is a former player, and some Korean guy who knew about the players. They're all in different places. And for some reason, they're on the screen the whole time. It was so, I felt so sad for everybody. Sad for ESPN, even though they make billions of dollars, and we're still paying full price, by the way, to have it on our cable systems, even though they have nothing to show anymore. I feel bad for them, and I feel bad for people who miss this stuff so much that they would actually watch cornhole or watch Korean baseball. Ravitch would, and then, by the way, for some reason,
well, Eli, what are the rate? How many people do watch? What are the ratings?
I have no idea. They're probably zero. But why they?
Well, the game is on at 1 o'clock in the morning.
Well, no, but they replay it here at 2 p.m.
Yeah, 13 times.
They keep the three announcers on the screen the whole time. They don't know who all the players are. So Ravitch say, "Who's this guy?" And the Korean kid will say, "Who he is? Who's that guy?" Or it's just, you know what?
Why wouldn't you watch? That sounds like fun to me. Funny
ESPN
stuff.
Has become 40 years later. They have come full circle. When they first hit the airwaves in 1979, they had to show stuff like Australian rules football. And we all laughed. These are sports we never saw before. They had all this time to fill. Now they're back there with 24 hours to fill and no sports. And we're looking at Korean baseball. It's very,
okay, well,
very
okay,
sad.
Eli, now keep this in mind. ESPN is not the only entity in the media right now reporting that Major League Baseball owners are in almost unanimous agreement and they're going to make this happen. The start to the season, guess when? The 4th of July. How patriotic. Now, here's the thing. We talked about this a lot on the show. The league and the union, as you know, have disagreed over how players will be paid when games are resumed. The union claims that within the agreement finalized in March, players are guaranteed their prorated salaries for games played, as the three of us have been saying here all along. Yes. Obvious way to go. But MLB now argues that the agreement also says salaries must be reconsidered if there are no fans in attendance. Mm-hmm. MLB would need a second negotiation if games were not played in front of fans because they're not getting any revenue.
It does not say that.
MLB
I have the contract.
Well, it does not say that.
What does it
say? I'm reading a news media report.
In an act of God can call everybody back to the table to renegotiate any number of things. An act of God, not because of what Bob just said. And that information.
Annie, I'm just reporting what the media
people. No, I know that,
Bob.
It's okay. I was just gonna qualify it by saying the story's been going around now for a little while, but it does not say that. It just says, and they use the broad term, the act of God, as most contracts do when you get to serious issues. And unfortunately, we've got an act of God. I mean, there's no question about it.
Well, it's still a negotiation.
Yes.
The owners can refuse to play under the old one. So they're probably going to figure something out. But here's the thing. I mean, I don't even know if I want to. I suppose it'll be interesting because it'll be so different. But, you know, there are some guys that aren't even going to play. There's this guy, Dave Dahl, who's had his spleen removed. Three players have type 1 diabetes. There's some guys that may not play. You got Carlos Carrasco that had a heart attack. And yet they're going to move forward with this. And at the same time, they're going to have to do all this disinfecting the baseballs, deep cleaning the clubhouses. What happens when a 65-year-old coach gets the virus? It seems so impossible. What they're trying to do is they're trying to go through the eye of a needle. They're trying to bat 1,000 and pitch a perfect game and avoid infections. And you just can't. And what happens when somebody gets infected? Who touched that doorknob? What happens to his family? I applaud them for trying because they're trying to cut their losses, but this is going to be, it's going to be ridiculous. I feel, you know, I'll still appreciate the
what should they
level.
Do, Eli? What should they do?
Well, they should do this. They should try and get back and do it. I don't blame them for trying to do this. It just seems wrought with peril, and I don't think we're going to accept it, except for the athleticism of the players. It's going to be all DH. They're going to change the rules. They're going to change the schedule. Who knows where they're going to play? I applaud the effort, but I think it's in peril from the beginning.
You know, I'll tell you where they're really missing the boat. I don't know if they're opening their eyes wide enough. If you tomorrow say, okay, folks, we're going to let everybody come back to the ballpark. Forget all the reluctance to allow you to come to the ballpark. Come to the ballpark if you want to watch a good baseball game. Who's coming? I mean, you've got to be nuts to think you're going to sit with 20, 30, 40,000 people because you know when you walk out of there, somebody's got it. And it's just like a story.
If you know you're not at risk of dying, Danny.
You don't know that.
Can I finish?
You don't know that.
There's a guy the other day who infected 80 people at a meeting. 80. That's one guy, 80 people. I mean, and now you've got 20, 30, 40,000 people in a ballpark. You just wonder. You're buying hot dogs. Well, you're getting Cokes. You're getting peanuts. You're getting all the stuff. Everything that you can expose is exposed.
Well, there aren't going to be people in the ballpark, but I still think
what I'm saying is take all the borders down. Let them in.
But, Bob, there's going to be 70-year-old Dusty Baker. There's going to be trainers. There's going to be clubhouse boys. There's going to be all types of personnel involved with them. And what happens when one gets infected? The problem here is, and I'm not going to get political here, but we have such a lack of information. You got Donald Trump taking hydrochloroquine, whatever it is, and you got Fauci saying the other thing. You've got the people say, well, Georgia's going to open up. There's going to be a spike in cases. There hasn't been. So we just don't know. There's going to be no bell that starts anew to signal all clear. Let me give you an analogy, okay? Last analogy. Well, on my little golf club on the fourth hole, you can't see the green. So the people in front of you have got to ring a bell to let you know that it's time to hit. Then you know I can hit my drive and I'm not going to hit anybody or harm anybody. There's no bell. There's no all clear signal here. We still don't know what it all means. And that's the problem and the only problem.
Right. Well, I don't want to get political either, but I did resent Michigan Governor Whitman the other day for putting out an arrest warrant for my buddy Eli Zarrett. She had taken the time out from her busy schedule to listen to our last show, in which Eli Zarrett, with no prompting, publicly admitted that he had gotten a haircut last weekend. Wednesday, barbers and hairstylists were protesting Michigan's stay-at-home order. You know this. They were giving away free haircuts in front of the state capitol in Lansing as they've become a symbol of businesses, small ones, that were shut down by Ms. Whitner. Non-essential businesses, you say, for whom? These people got to make a living. Mm-hmm. And then this thing with Ben Roethlisberger the other day. He got a haircut, too. Buddy of his owns Norman's Cut and Edge Shop in Sewickley, Pennsylvania. Goes to get his haircut and his huge beard cut off. He told everybody afterwards. And now the governor of Pennsylvania, Tom Wolf, came down on Roethlisberger and said he had no right to do that. That was very dangerous.
That's a different topic. That's a totally different topic.
Total different topic.
Totally different.
On top of that, the reason why he got the haircut and cut off his beard is because he can now throw the football again. That's exactly why he did it. So it's got nothing to do with this. As far as our governor, listen, I'm not going to get political as much as I want to right now. Whether she's a Republican, Democrat, a goof living in a tree, she's done a hell of a job. Check the numbers, Bob. Check the numbers. She's done a great job.
Let's
see what happens from this point forward.
The other problem is we have 50 governors
right.
with 50 different plans. And that's a problem, too. But even, you know, listen, again, I'm glad they're doing it. Did you see what Gabe Kapler said? Gabe Kapler said, because one of the things, no high fives, no hugs, pitchers can't lick their fingers, and there's no spitting. And Kapler, who manages the Giants, said, when you've been doing it all your life, it's like breaking yeah, any habit. It's
right.
going to be hard when things get – this is what we've – you know what this is like? And I think what's going to happen is they're going to start again. There's going to be some infections. I hope not. And they're going to have to stop it again. This is the Sisyphus thing in the Bible. I don't know. But in 400 B.C., the king of Corinth for eternity – consigned Sisyphus to push that rock up to the top of the hill, and he would get to the top and it would come back down. And this is what's going to happen. We're going to push that rock.
We use the term Sisyphean task.
Yes,
when you're pissing into the wind, in other words.
This is a Sisyphean task. To push that, you're going to push that rock to the top of the hill. And again, an amazing effort to get everything coordinated. We don't even know where they're going to play the games. Is it going to be in your home?
Right.
Is it going to be in the, and so it's also uncertain, though they have an 80-page plan and they have consulted every expert they could possibly find. My fear is it's going to get to the top of the hill. Somebody's going to get infected. Who did he touch? I played with him. We handled the same ball. We touched the same knob in the toilet. I sat in the seat with him. Who knows? And they're going to have to stop it again. And that would be tragedy again.
Two things real quick. One is that as far as, yes, somebody's going to get it. There's no question. But the owners really threw out the big bullet the other day. They're now predicting they've got two or three teams that may file reorganization or bankruptcy, one of the chapters.
Really?
So right away, they go to the bankruptcy number, and all of a sudden, we're supposed to bend over and expect them. Listen, the players are trying to get what they signed an agreement for, and that's all they're trying to do. Whatever it is, and I still don't think we're going to have a season this year. I'm sorry. I just don't think so.
This guy.
Yeah, my question I got. Listen to my old pal Dennis Dale McLean
is
how did Kennedy Snake Stabler ever throw him a touchdown pass with all that long hair and a beard? You said Ben couldn't play no ball if he didn't cut his hair and shave his beard. Why's that?
Bob, it had nothing to do with what he could or could not do. He
you
just
said
told everybody
he had to play football. He had to cut his hair or shave.
Bob, he had a big operation in September, a monster operation. He had the operation, and he said, and if I can throw this football again when I get better and they tell me I can let it go, I'm going to cut off all my hair or most of my hair and my beard. And that's what he did. He kept a promise.
Baseball's 75 million a day. Can they test enough? Probably not. Quarantine. They're only going to quarantine the individual test positive. That means others could still be there. You got counties like LA, which has restrictions for more than 3 months. Where are those teams going to play? So, you know, it's what this guy, his name is, he worked.
Let's do Bryant Gumbel right now.
Hold on a second. His name is Andy Dolich. He's a consultant, been executive for many teams. He's consulted him on sports. He says, what's at stake is a human life. That might sound overdramatic,
but
it doesn't sound overdramatic to me. That's a person with a name who has a family who could die. We hope that doesn't happen, but I think they're rolling the dice in a major, major way. They can take every precaution and still have it blow up in their face.
Okay, let's do Bryant Gumbel now, everybody.
Go ahead.
And now let's move on. This is a big story here. See this? Dateline, Grand Rapids, Michigan. Curtis Blackwell's claims against Mark D'Antonio and other retired Michigan State officials thrown out of court.
Yeah.
On Wednesday, just thrown out of court.
Oh, really?
U.S. District Judge Janet Neff dismissed allegations that Blackwell was wrongly terminated as an assistant coach because he declined to speak to detectives about a possible sexual assault involving MSU football players. So you know this. He argued he was wrongfully arrested, accused of covering up the sex assault because he wouldn't talk to these people. Now, the judge agreed with another judge's recommendations that Blackwell's attorneys used the court to harangue the MSU defendants into exhausted compliance. The judge also dismissed Blackwell's claims against Luana Simon and former athletic director Mark Hollis, both of whom are retired. And guys, why doesn't this happen more in our court systems over baseless or frivolous lawsuits? Neff removed Blackwell's attorneys from the case and ordered them to pay monetary sanctions to the wrong defendants. Just what Mark D'Antonio needs. After his golden parachute out of Michigan State, more money.
Well, let me say this, Dave. Since I've been to court probably more times than you guys.
Yes, you have.
I can say this, that case isn't over with. Somebody will file an appeal. They'll try to get it back on track. This is a long way from, if he has the resources that it appears he has, Blackwell, this thing's going to not end today or tomorrow. This thing's going to end in a number of years with somebody writing a check. I still think somebody's going to write a check just to get rid of this thing now. And we'll see if it's Blackwell or the other side. But Blackwell's really hung in there for a long time. And I don't think he's right about most of it. But the bottom line is, if you're going to go that far, it's tough to give up the ball and the bat in the ninth inning.
Yeah, but Denny, it has been ruled that he can continue with his suit against the two police officers who arrested him, and apparently they roughed him up, and there were all kinds of charges and counter
charges. Doesn't it seem unusual that, whether it's this or the college basketball thing, the big names, whether it's Sean Miller or whether D'Antonio, it never catches up to them. Yeah, they manage to stay clear of it, and it's gonna be the same thing at Michigan with the whole Robert Anderson thing. How does Bo stay out of it? The big guys, the big names, somehow know how to steer clear.
Let me bring up Michael Jordan for a minute. I don't know if anybody else has had it.
On the subject,
I have totally had enough. Now they're talking about him being so drunk in the game two of a playoff series that he couldn't walk and talk, but he played four quarters, about 38 minutes. I don't care anymore. I room with a guy.
I don't believe that.
Jordan was
I played with a guy with the Detroit. I don't believe it either. I played with a guy who I knew drank in the morning. 7 o'clock, he'd have the first popper. About 8:30, he'd have a second popper. And before he had lunch or breakfast or whatever meal he wanted to call
come
it.
Come on, everybody knows who that was.
A third popper. That's not the point. And I'm not going to use the name Ray Euler. So the bottom line is, it sounds a lot to me like Ray Euler at times when you read the full gist of the story. But Ray was a pleasant, good guy and everything else. Listen, he just had a real bad problem.
Drinking was a real part of the whole culture. I mean, Mickey Mantle, and it used to be like a glorified part, although it isn't now, where he would be hung over and somehow hit a home run, when he couldn't even see, when he saw three balls coming up to the
plate. Eli, hang on a second. Yeah. Tell them the story about when you and I went up to do Mickey. And how happy Mickey was that afternoon to see us or anybody else.
Let me tell you that after I tell you that David Hall and Hall Financial care about the community. That's why Hall Financial is working from home around the clock. They're going to help you as they're helping so many others save money refinancing. Great time to look at your options right now. And if you haven't refinanced in the last year, you can lower your monthly payments, keep some extra money in your pocket, because you can probably, when you refinance, skip a couple of payments. If you're worried about coronavirus and affecting the appraisal, don't. They will appraise your house driving by. Their service at Hall is the fastest in the business. They have nearly 1,500 five-star reviews from Michigan homeowners alone. So go to the webpage or get started by calling 248-308-5000. Hall Financial. Lower payments, better options, more personal attention as you are listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. So it was really an exciting day for me because, I mean, although I wasn't a Yankee fan growing up in New York, either a National and American League fan, I was a National League fan. Mickey Mantle was still Mickey Mantle larger than life. And, of course, you know the story where Denny threw the ball down the middle and Mickey hit his 535th homer at the time, moved him into fourth or fifth place. He passed Jimmy Fox with that homer, and he loved Denny for it so much. And you applauded him as he ran around the bases, and he signaled to you. And years later, this was 1991 or two, maybe even later than that, just a couple of years before he died. Yeah. We meet him at a hotel on Northwestern Highway. What the hotel is now, but it was a big one there with the.
I think it was at
the town center. It's that big hotel at the town center. And I had to go back and do the 6 o'clock news, and you don't drink anyway.
Right.
And behind his chair in the hotel room was a bottle of some white, was it vodka? It was vodka. And he was already half sloshed, and he kept on saying, "You sure you guys don't want to drink?"
Only half?
He was happy, put it that way. And he kept on asking us if we wanted a drink, and I felt so bad because I would have loved to have a drink with Mickey Mantle. But I just had one of my rules is I don't get high or get drunk before I go to work. It doesn't help. It doesn't mix. It doesn't do anybody any good. But I felt really, really, really bad about that I couldn't share with. He told some hilarious stories that day, and it really came through. And he was your boyhood hero, and then he became you became his hero because you dished up that home run to him. And by the way, you know, as the story goes, the next batter was Joe Pepitone. He said, "Pitch it right here," and you sent him on his heels with a fastball under the chin. And we should post, although it's got some expletive on it on our website.
It sure does.
A signed picture on your wall from Joe Pepitone. But
yeah, you know, I'm glad you mentioned it because I had mean to. Your first time you ever go over to Denny McLean's house, he didn't have a lot of memorabilia up there about his career or his life.
I sold it
but
all.
You walk into his
no,
den.
I did that.
Yeah. You walk you into over, his den.
It, yeah, if and you there's go a to the house picture. Right now, you'd find it all.
You walk into Denny's den, and there's a signed picture of Joe Pepitone up on the wall. Denny, why? What's the story behind that?
I just told the story.
That's
just told
the story.
The whole story?
Joe was the next hitter, and Joe put his hand out over home plate and said, "Denny, now I'm going to be back next year. I'm playing next year. I'm your first baseman for the Yankees next year. I'll help you if you get in trouble." And I said, "Yeah, okay, Joe." So I threw the hardest fastball I threw that day, knocked him on his butt, and now he's laying on the ground. Said, "You know, you almost killed me, you son of a bitch. You know that? It came too close. What are you doing to me?" And we struck him out in the next two pitches. But he was just a great guy, just a terrific guy.
The caption says, "Thanks for that effing ball at my head because of that effing mantle."
Eli, how's recruiting going over there at your alma mater in Ann Arbor for football?
Don't know. I haven't paid attention.
Well, I'll just report this, that Ohio State has the number one class in the nation by a wide margin. This was announced just this week. Of Ohio State's 18 commits so far, 11 among the nation's top 100, according to 247 Sports Composite. This one-time small college quarterback from New Hampshire, Ryan Day, amazing, 16-1 in his 2 years. Since replacing Urban Meyer. And Michigan, I mean, it's not that they're not recruiting, but the rich are getting richer, and it's going to be continuing to be at Michigan's expense. How are they going to beat these guys?
I hear 2020. Are you talking about 2020 or 2021? Because they're already way ahead in 2021. They're killing everybody.
Just unbelievable. Yeah. That's really something. Did you also see the Buckeyes are saying that they expect to play all their home games this year with crowds of between 20,000 to 50,000? Now, Harbaugh said this week that if Michigan has to play its home games in front of an empty stadium, imagine that, the big house empty, he'll be okay with it. He did not use the term Hobson's choice, but Jimmy said it'll be better than playing no games.
Can you imagine? I read it's Gene Smith, the Ohio State athletic director, who wants to get 15 or 20,000 people there with social distancing and all that. Can you imagine what the price of the ticket will be or what they could charge if they scalp them? Because when you take a stadium with 100,000 people and probably 200 would like to go there, and now only 10,000 can go, what those tickets are going to go for and what a badge of honor it would be to be one of the few that actually gets into the stadium to see.
But Eli, Denny just asked us a question. For people who feel the way Denny does about this whole COVID-19 thing, how many people are going to say, "I don't care how much, there's no way I'm going out to that stadium with 20,000 other people"?
Well, I don't know. I think there will be 20,000 volunteers if they're convinced about social distancing. Yeah, and they can wear their masks. You see,
you know what? People aren't going into the restaurants. Restaurants are open around us out here in Wixom, some of them.
Listen, I don't think Gene Smith would say that. If he's saying, I thought 20,000 max, he said 10 or 20,000. If it seats 110,000 and there's 20, that means only one out of five seats, you can stay safe. You can wear a mask and stay safe. Here's the thing about masks, though. You know, if it was an armband, nobody would care. We'd all wear them all. I'd wear it to bed. Right. The fact is it has to cover your face. And this is why it's looked as a sign of weakness by some people. And the fact is we're toxic. We can kill each other. And we've ignored that all these years. We've been able to live around it. That's the thing that makes the mask so awful. You can't see if somebody's smiling. Okay. You can't see who they are. It's really
you in bed with an armband. What a nice look.
I'm at the grocery store the other day without my mask, of course. And this really attractive, like Italian.
Why would you say, of course?
Because I've never worn a mask.
So you're willing to affect
it's
people.
It's different
okay.
down here in Florida. So I'm trying to say that this woman is shopping by herself. Very attractive Italian looking girl in her 40s. And I turned to her. I said, you're really beautiful. It's been so long since I've seen a woman without a mask on. I've forgotten what a lot of you people look like.
Oh,
that's what's come to. So now we're talking about whether people would go to the stadium, whether they would have these games. The reason that Ohio State is anxious to play and get some revenue is because as we tape this program on Thursday morning, ESPN is reporting that the financial wreckage due to this pandemic is going to cost $4 billion to American universities if the 2020 football season is canceled. They've already suffered hundreds of millions of dollars in losses thus far. That's going to grow significantly because they don't know whether they can bring students back to campuses yet this fall. I mean, it's and then consider this, MSU's payouts in the Nassar scandal. Eli just mentioned the Dr. Anderson abuse scandal. That's going to wind up costing Michigan how much? Ohio State has its similar sex scandal. Yesterday, Central Michigan dropped track and field to save some $600,000 a year. And we talked about Bowling Green the other day, ending its big-time baseball program. They can't afford it.
Well, everybody's watching Notre Dame right now because Notre Dame says they're going to have classes back at the university this fall. So everybody's going to watch to see what they do. And hopefully they do the right thing. Cause I was surprised that out of all the schools named that Notre Dame would be the first one to step out there. Yeah. By the way, one other thing, I got everybody here, and tell me what you think of this just for the hell of it. An unnamed NFL player is suing United Airlines.
I saw that
for being sexually harassed, assaulted, and violated by a female passenger. I want to know the next time she flies.
Well, listen, you haven't seen her yet.
They said she was drunk out of her mind, really loud and obnoxious.
I may drink with her.
You remember, we all remember we were young and horny between, you know, 20-year-olds or whatever. There were still women you would not talk to or did not want to date. So the fact is, I think if you saw a picture of her, you would have done the same thing and maybe even faster than the NFL player.
Did you see a picture?
No, I didn't.
I didn't either.
No, but hey, aren't you guys curious, though? In this case, what does this NFL player mean by saying he was sexually assaulted? Did she grab his crotch?
Yes, she did. She
grabbed everything she could.
Yes, she didn't take no for an answer.
Women maybe it is, but I don't think for us.
And they not only did she, but she all kinds of complaints from other passengers on the plane for what she was doing.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Hey, Danny, I know you always love it when I do this, so why don't we keep up with the student athletes, student athletes for one moment. Oregon football signee Luke Hill has been arrested and is facing 8 different charges, including attempted murder in the first degree.
Oh, my God.
Though authorities are saying in his native Maryland that they're not going to give out any details yet. This kid's a 4-star cornerback, top 200 recruit nationally. He signed with the Ducks over offers from Clemson and Michigan, among others. He's no longer at Oregon now. Everybody wanted this kid. And, Danny, I'm just curious that he would go from his hometown of Baltimore all the way out to Eugene to play college football. I mean, you don't think that Oregon would have or might have. I mean, I'm sure.
The air is so nice there. I would just go there for the air. That's what he did.
Yeah, they got great water out there, too. You just got to stay away from their volcanoes.
Hey, you mentioned Jordan earlier. I thought this is a story you were going to say. That yesterday, or this on Sunday, Sotheby's sold a 1985 rookie game-worn and autographed Jordan, part of the signature line that the company had created to woo Jordan to sign. So it's a little bit different. It was just a special edition, red, not white laces and a few other material things, sold for $560,000 a pair of his shoes.
I got one better than this.
What?
Mike Trout's rookie card sold for $900,000 the other day.
What?
I got that right here, and I was going to ask you about that.
How many are there? There's thousands of them, aren't there?
There are no shortages.
There are no shortages.
Wait,
this
each
card
one
must be so perfect that you could not eat the gum.
But there's hundreds and hundreds of others. They must. Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
That I don't believe.
Because Denny, again, is into this memorabilia business, as I think you all know. And you talk to any guy who deals sports cards now or any fan who collects them, and they're going to tell you that there's nothing after about 1980 that has any value whatsoever.
You're right.
It's not like the 52 Topps series where they printed so few at the end of the year because people were losing interest at that point of the year and not buying cards anymore. That's why the Mickey Mantle 52 Topps is one of the gold standards of collecting. They didn't make any of them.
Yeah, let me add something else too. For the last year and a half, 2 years, the price of cards, the value of cards has come up again. We haven't seen the value of cards increase in value in about 15, 20 years. And all of a sudden, these cards have some significant value again. For instance, you know, let's say a Roger Maris card that used to sell for $5, now going for $20, $25, $30.
Yeah. Well, you know, the internet kind of killed the business, but Bob has been to my house and seen I got every card from 57 to 60 in mint condition because my aunt worked for the card company designing boxes, and I should have gotten 10. In fact, she would get it stamped out from the sheet. It didn't have to go through the actual packs of cards. We lost a terrible loss over the weekend when this guy, and I'm going to have Brandon play the soundbite from him, tragically died. Brandon, go ahead.
We all got to go,
Eli.
Call
me, Mom?
Yes, Wally.
Good morning, Mrs. Cleaver. That's a very pretty dress.
Oh, hi, Eddie.
How do you do, Mr. Cleaver? Excuse me, sir.
That boy is so polite, it's almost un-American.
Yes, Eddie Haskell. What was his name?
Ken Osmond.
Ken Osmond. Yeah, who?
It was an L.A. cop. It was like my personal hero, Jethro Bodine on the Beverly Hillbillies. Max Bayer Jr., the son of the legendary world heavyweight champion Max Bayer, he couldn't get arrested after Beverly Hillbillies. He'd go into these auditions in L.A. and they'd break up laughing. Jethro, what are you doing here? Same with Eddie Haskell.
Well, but that's because he wasn't a great actor. And yes, he did call it a death sentence when he was on with Bill O'Reilly years ago. But you know, look at the Seinfeld. Okay. Jerry Seinfeld had a great career after that, and so did Julia Louis-Dreyfus. But George Costanza
we all know what happened to Kramer, right?
Yeah. Right. Well, but neither of them could get a job either, so it had to do with his acting
ability. But I mean, this has nothing to do with sports, but we have an older skewing audience, and this is such a huge part of our childhood.
And I just wanted to, the Beaver, and I met Jerry Mathers years later. I said, Jerry, when you were in Miss Landers' fourth grade class, I was in fourth grade. Of course, he had Miss Landers every year. When you were in Miss Landers' fifth grade class, I was in fifth grade also. So Eddie was the older guy, when you're 10 years old, a 15-year-old kid is just, he's so much farther along. He was so intimidating. He was so, he put the Beaver in his place. Here's my favorite. Oh, good afternoon, Mrs. Cleaver. I was just telling Wallace how pleasant it would be for Theodore to accompany us to the movies. These lines were just classic.
Yeah,
and he was such a wise guy. So whatever.
And this is the difference between our two personalities, old pal. You loved Eddie Haskell.
I loved
it. We all hated him. He was such a smarmy little phony.
I love mommy.
Barbara Billingsley.
Yo, boy. Oh, boy.
Yeah.
I want to thank, while we have a chance here, the people who have donated to us. We're going to talk about a little bit more when the mailbag comes up. But Randall Best, $100, thank you. And he says, thanks for continuing on in the COVID era. Jimmy Lyons sent a recurring $10. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We got 50 from a guy called The Butchery, Ronald Webb. He enjoys the show, says, I hope you can meet expenses and can afford a part-time mute button for Bob's mic, he put in there. Very interesting thing.
I'll tell you what, pal, if that's what you want, you send your next donation. It better be for a lot more money to me directly, all right?
And Ed Lawan sent 50. Ron W. and Clausen sent some money, too. And Dom Vitale. Now, Dom Vitale, when you get to the mailbag, he's the guy who advised me for lack of creativity and hurt me to the core. And now he's want to get back into the fold. He sent not one letter, but three, saying he wishes we'll let him back in. By the way, Don, we can't control it. You can listen, even if we didn't want you to. We can't ban you. Thank you for coming around. You still haven't apologized, though, for calling me uncreative. Yeah.
Well, you led the mailbag, don't you? Want to do another commercial, then we'll get to that.
Let's talk about Luke Nowacki for a minute, then we'll get to the mailbag and I got some other stories here, too. He's worked with individuals, families, business owners. He is a personal wealth manager for Pinnacle Wealth Strategies, and he has experience and knowledge and can help you out, especially in these troubled times. Call him at 248-663-4748 to create a plan to reach your financial goals that are changing all the time. And who knows what the future holds here, but Luke will help set you straight with all the facts you need to know. The consultation is complimentary. Answer all the questions. Advisory service off the Royal Lines Associates, Inc. Other marketing names, product service, reference here, independent Royal Lines Associates. So call Luke Nowacki, Pinnacle Wealth Strategies. Again, 248-663-4748. You're listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast.
You know, Eli, that just gave me a great idea. As you know, Danny's a big fan favorite.
That'll be the first.
Everybody likes Eli Zarrett. A lot of people really don't like me. Some people even hate me. So could we set up like a separate fund to buy me out of the show? Like everybody who hates me could send a lot of money in to get me off the show. And when we got to a certain point, I'd get the check. I'd go buy an island.
I got an idea. Eli and I will give you $10 a piece. Is that enough?
By the way, Bob, people don't like me and Denny also, but compared to you, we become their favorites. So it's called process of elimination or guilt by association. I don't know. But I want to just say that we're able to meet our expenses. We have substantial expenses every month, over $4,000. We were able to meet them last month. Thanks. Still gave $500 to the Gleaners Bank. So please, if you go to the donation page on our website, you can make a recurring donation. Even a dollar a month would be great, would help us out. 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, whatever it is, that would be great too. So thank you very, very much. So I don't have to fund the show out of my pocket as I have been for most of the time. Don't feel sorry for me though. I'm okay.
And one other quick item before the mailbag, Shad Gaspard died a day or two ago, the wrestler. He and his son were out on the ocean swimming and, you know, just having a good time. And they walked into, what do you call it? One of those
water spouts.
Spouts, something more dramatic than that, as a matter of fact. And lo and behold, they got caught in one. And lo and behold, again, they were able to save his 10-year-old son. And just as they were turning around to go get Shad, another huge wave grabbed him and took him out to sea. They found the body yesterday afternoon.
That's an awful story.
It's a shame.
I talked about masks a little while ago because I do wear my mask when I go out in public. Not that I'm so worried about it, but I want other people to feel comfortable around me that I'm not going to infect them. That's why I question Bob, because it isn't to protect you so much as to protect others who may be fearful of being near you as we try and figure out, and nobody's really helping us because they can't, to know what's safe and what isn't safe. But the point is the NFL is also, and they have more time, right? Because NBA wants to finish their season desperately. NHL sure. wants to finish the season desperately. And what are you going to do? And baseball obviously has to get going. So football's had the most time to wait, and they've had the most time to, you know, to figure out ways to do it and watch what the other guys do and see how they manage to do it as they all work so hard to get this going. So the Oakley company, working with NFL engineers, are testing prototypes of a modified face mask that could contain the surgical material, the N95 stuff, working with the Players Association. And there's a way to put it over their entire face. Now, I didn't get that because you got to be able to see, but apparently it's going to, you know, completely encapsulate them. They've got some prototypes and they're looking at everything of what happens when it fogs up, etc. That'll probably be a recommendation that the NFL use such masks when the league returns to play. So, you know, again, this is the mask. It's so important, and we're still trying to figure out how to get all this done. Football, we hope, comes back, but they're working on it, and they got a long way to go. No dates at all on the calendar at this point of when they could open training camp or anything like that.
And speaking of masks, I'm going to have some exploratory surgery tomorrow on my left eye. So
good for you.
Going
get
to,
that done. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's going to
good
be
luck, good luck.
Lots
with
of
that,
fun Danny. As they go in and move your eyeball around.
Now, the NFL, along the lines of that, has acknowledged that a number of its personnel will be infected. So they're saying it's going to happen.
Yep.
It's going to happen. The chief medical officer, Alan Sill, says, because this disease will remain endemic in society, it shouldn't be a surprise that new positive cases arise. Our challenge is to identify them as quickly as possible and prevent the spread to other participants. How they do that, They don't know. They'll have detailed plans later on. And that's what the Players Association is waiting for in baseball. What is the plan to keep us safe? How can Mike Trout go play baseball and then go be with his wife when she's having her baby? All these questions are up in the air.
First of all, you misspoke. It isn't about how safe they can keep him. It's still about the money. It's number one, the money. If the money gets approved today, they'll start playing baseball in July. Yes, the health is a significant issue, but it isn't the issue that pushes them over the top. Believe me, it isn't.
Well, you guys will be happy to know that our first letter in the mailbag segment of the program today comes from, let me see if I get this name right, Bob Page of New York City and West Palm Beach, Florida, who writes, "Dear Eli and Denny, you know I love you both like brothers, but please stop talking so much about COVID-19 all the time."
Sorry, it's the number one story of the day.
Okay.
Look at Eli. He's actually on our closed circuit TV. He's also looking up at his monitor to see, where's that letter?
I'm looking for the mailbag here. Go ahead.
All right, here we go. This is the mailbag segment.
We have more to do, but let's do the
And we want to let you know, first of all, that you can tweet any of the three of us, at Eli Zarrett, at MU2Denny, or at Bob Page Sports. You can call us and leave a message or a text at 769-89-BALLS.
You gave the wrong number out. It's 760-89-BALLS.
He's an old man.
And he reads it and still screws it up. He's got it written down.
It wasn't that I misread it. I miswrote it.
Oh, okay.
That's even worse. Brandon, I'll pick it up with or. You can. Okay, here we go.
No. That stays in. You misread, but you miswrote.
Oh, we're going to use all this.
Oh, absolutely.
Remember this. Every time I make a mistake, I get challenged from you two guys. I get beat up. I get hit over the head. I get whacked. Can I whack you for that or
whack
not?
Whack him.
My personal feeling is that one of the greatest philosophers of the late 20th century is Phil Mickelson. So I can only repeat what Phil Mickelson said after choking away the U.S. Open in New York. I'm such an idiot.
I don't know why
I can't get that number straight.
Oh, by the way, I have one for the guy who calls you the FI, but that's for later.
We don't read that jerk off stuff anymore, and he knows why.
Well, I'm going to tell you what then let me knock it out right now. Okay,
has no business on the show. I've told you this three times. He uses vituperative, obscene language to refer to me. You want to criticize me? I don't care. No, I'm a big boy.
Okay. Well, he brings up what I criticized you for in the last show, when you said the five white guys on the bench.
Yeah, I don't care. He called me a racist, right? Is he called me a racist? That's right. I'm a racist.
No, you're not. Now, here's the deal. Bill Maher did the same thing. And I like Bill Maher, who's liberal but he used the N-word on his show and got in big trouble. And his theory is, or what he's thinking is, well, everybody knows that I'm a liberal. Everybody knows that I'm for equality. Everybody knows that I feel that black folks are getting a raw deal, whatever. So I can say it. No. So I know you're not a racist, but that doesn't mean that you can say it as if the black guys aren't smart enough to be academic all-Americans. It was a mistake on your part, and you don't apologize for mistakes. I do when people incorrectly call me out.
It's not a mistake on my part. I said what I said. I'll say it again, and I will stand by what I said. You are a knee-jerk left-winger, and this offended your PC sensibilities. I don't think it offended many others. We only, as our hero, Howard Cohen of Brooklyn, New York, once opined, tell it it is.
But you're not telling it like it is because your statement was incorrect. Because of Nunes, those five, it's not all five white guys at all.
It was an incorrect statement.
We got another PC guy here, our producer.
I'm not PC, but I mean, if you're going to say it's one thing, it's not true.
No.
It was funny, you PC jerks.
Oh, we didn't think it was funny. Okay.
But Bob,
I can tell you this.
We just don't appreciate a sense of humor. That's the problem.
That's right.
Get your sense of humor.
That's right.
There you go. Okay, Bob, back to the mailbag.
Hang on a minute. See, this is what's wrong. If anything he says is supposed to be funny, anything anybody else says, he takes personally. You can't have it both ways, Bobby Booby.
Denny, I'm no different than you.
Yes, you have been ripped.
I have been ripped in major newspaper headlines in the largest.
Bob, you don't know what a rip is.
You don't know it compared to. Okay, let's go back to the bag.
I got a thick skin, Denny.
Back to the bag.
You have no idea what rip is.
Back to the bag.
I was trying to mention Robbie Silverman.
Go ahead.
Huge fan of ours from Detroit originally. He listens to all our shows out in Arizona. He tweeted me after Monday's podcast. I hope you all were listening. And he says, Eli's barking dog was great radio. I'm sure the disgruntled mailbagger Dom Vitale can't find that anywhere else. Thanks, Eli. And of course, now Robbie has to pay royalties to the estate of George Kell for saying, thanks, Eli.
Hello again, everyone.
So Robbie continues, it was a memorable part of the show. Eli's dog should be a regular feature. And at least the dog didn't let one go, like Detroit sportscaster Dan Miller's dog did on the air one time. It's actually reality that your audience never heard before, and good for a chuckle. So, Eli, where's the dog?
Well, the dog is quiet today. What got him going was the guy was cleaning our windows, and he was looking through the window at him and got very upset. But the booger man is hanging out in the other room. He's fine.
He is a cutie. He really is. And he was just trying to let you guys know that somebody was at the door.
Right. So it was attacking our house. Go ahead.
Tiger Mike 1975 tweets us, somehow I had never heard about Jimmy Carson's name change before the interview you did with him the other day. As a reminder, Jimmy was actually born Demetrius Kyriazopoulos. And Tiger Mike says, another wonderful job and an interesting peek behind the scenes into Jimmy's career and the people around him. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Paul Hibbert follows up, great episode Monday. Jimmy Carson interview was just phenomenal. One question. We all know Eli has a healthy appetite for edibles and recreational use of cannabis. I'd think with all the weed in his system, he wouldn't be as cranky as he is. Eli, calm down. No comment from the peanut gallery on that one.
No, listen, if I didn't have it in my system, imagine how uptight I would be.
Oh, it'd be awful, folks.
We haven't heard from Tom Bell in a while, longtime listener from Detroit, now living in Chicago. Love the show. He's got some quick comments. He says, I don't mind the back and forth about the pandemic, but knock off the generalities and misquoted data, especially from Denny. Keep on
now,
going.
Now what did the Denny say?
He says that just what he said here. He didn't.
So what is he talking about?
He's not adducing specific incidents. Jeez. He just made a general comment.
Denny, come on, Denny. You're great, but accuracy is not your greatest asset. So let's just move on. It's fine. We love
you guys. Well, that's one of the things we love about the kingdom of truth and everything else that goes along with it. Right?
Justice in the American way. That's one of the things I really find personally charming about Denny McClain, because he's got all these amazing stories, as your listeners go, and he tells them three or four times, but they're never the same. They change from time to time.
Well, we got 3 minutes left in the show, so get back
more
to
details.
All right. So he also, what's he saying? He wants us to keep going with the mailbag, that he doesn't like Denny's mailman theme song. I disagree. I think, and he loved the Jim Abbott interview, so on and so forth. Now, the aforementioned Dom Vitale here in Palm Beach County, as Eli said, is back with us this week. Apparently hat in hand, as I told you he would be, Eli. So Eli told you what he said on the last show, and this from Dan McAnally, who writes, Eli and crew, with all due respect to Mr. Vitale, every form of media these days is talking about COVID-19, as they should be, as it's the very top of everybody's mind right now. It has nothing to do with your show. My guess is that Mr. Vitale is frustrated with things as they are, and is just venting. I sometimes get that way myself, but the Red Shovel Network of Drew Lane's is a huge part of my life now, and I love your show. So don't let this gentleman's email upset you too much, as this too will pass.
Well, one other thing too, Eli, is we don't spend a lot of time on that particular subject. We talk about people that we are aware of that are being affected by it in the world of sports, more or less. Yeah. So, I mean, we're not sitting there and reading reports.
Listen,
and what
the only thing that bothered me, Mr. Vitale, was he suggested that we were not being creative.
Get over
it. So his letter to this, he goes, love you. I would love to extend a heartfelt apology to all three of you older gentlemen. You didn't insult them. You just insulted me, Dom. Keep up the great work. I got your back. Encouragement. Very sweet. And Dom sent us some money this week. So, but Dom, you're back in our good graces. You're allowed to continue listening.
Yeah, but you didn't read the whole thing. He also says, listening to you guys talk about the boring golf last weekend at Jupiter, Florida, he lives down here, was atrocious. First of all, Eli, there's hardly any water on that Seminole course where they held it, as you claimed there was. But I hope I'm not on my way to a ban from NFS. No, Dom.
Well, there were some aerial shots that showed several holes that had water. But yes, it was not a big hazard there.
And that was not a tournament. That little charity tournament was not something that wanted people to be fooled with a golf course. They wanted these guys to score as low as they could.
Good point. Go ahead. You got 1 minute left. We're out of time.
AJD wrote to say, Bob says Jim Joyce was a great guy and a great umpire. He may have been a great guy. However, a great umpire, Miles really. Umpire. I mean, he had a long career, but that Galarraga call, Joyce, along with the other so-called great umpires, can never qualify as being great thanks to instant replay. Well, AJD, just so you know, Jim Joyce was rated the best umpire in all of Major League Baseball by an ESPN anonymous poll of 100 players just a couple years ago. Really? And as far as the replay goes, the reason the umpires are often found to be wrong is because managers don't challenge calls because they see the replay, understand the umpire was right. They only challenge when a guy is apparently wrong. So these guys just, and he's actually suggesting that Joyce, after that blown call at first base, should have immediately conferred with the home plate.
Yes.
The second base umps. You can't do that. You don't know anything about umpiring, AJD. The only time you ever confer with other umpires about a call you made is when you're not sure you saw the play. Trap in the outfield, fair or foul over the fence, home run or not. Sometimes if a call appears to be wrong, another umpire or the crew chief might come running up. He's going to ask you one question. Jimmy, are you sure you saw it? If Jimmy says yes, that's the end of the discussion.
Yeah, the problem there was he was safe by a yard. That's the problem. By the way, we got to say goodbye to our radio audience at WCWA in Toledo and at WDFN.
Oh, we can do more mailbag after this.
We can. You've been listening to the No Filter Sports Podcast. Okay, but enough of this. Go ahead. One more.
What is this one more stuff?
One of us.
No, no más. Yo tengo más. Tengo cuatro o cinco, por lo menos, señor.
Okay. Well, we got Tom Brookins coming up, so hang in there, people. Go ahead.
Okay. You know, I love this.
He's going to be great.
I got some good stuff here. I love this one from John Bonzak. Hey, guys, I just wanted to thank you for having Jim Abbott on. I was born with Erb's palsy in my right shoulder, which left me with about 20% usage. I looked up to Jim Abbott as a true hero. I learned to pitch the same way he did, threw and caught with my left hand by switching gloves just like Jim. Even as an adult playing softball now, I still do it the same way. Most people don't even notice because I can do it fast. I was very emotional listening to Jim Abbott speak to you guys, because I used it as fuel when I was a boy growing up. This interview you did meant a lot to me. I got to meet Jimmy when he played for the Yankees. It will always be my greatest memory.
Well, as I said that day, he redefined the word class. It was a great interview.
Yeah, it really was.
All right, I'll do one more then, and I've got a couple more, you guys, especially from Jeff the Alaskan. I want to address the cool note.
Bob, I got to be somewhere Monday.
Yeah,
that's fine. David German adds. on the subject of Jimmy Abbott, David German adds, I enjoyed the episode and was fortunate enough to be in attendance at Abbott's no-hitter in 93. Regarding Bob's comment, where he wondered who made the comment that there are a billion Chinese who don't care about what's going on right now in North American sports, it was Dean Smith. He would tell his team that in the waning moments of a tense game, a billion red Chinese don't care. Just to put the moment in perspective, and Dean was quite a philosopher, but I'm going to tell you this, David. I did research on this after I read your note. Sports Illustrated, in Dean Smith's obit, said he truly understood this concept. Nothing about him inventing that. Reggie Jackson once said years ago, I was reminded by Jim Boughton that 1 billion red Chinese don't care, and the great, and he really was such a card, John McKay, the football coach, you said years ago, 600 million red Chinese don't care about what's going on with USC football. I don't know. I'd like to know who was the first person who ever said that. I don't know if it was Dean Smith.
Well, whatever it is, nobody's perfect.
Nobody cares. Nobody's
perfect. And I got to tell them, they also, now that I messed up the phone number again, you can email us. I think I can get this right. AskNoFilter@gmail.com.
Well done. Yes. And 760-89-BALLS. You must have got it wrong last time because everything was email. We didn't get any questions on 89-BALLS. But that's okay. Call us and leave a message. Anything else? Can we say goodnight and talk to Tommy Brookins?
You just told me you guys both just said you want to shut down the mailbag. You want anything else? Oh, I do have something else, by the way. Not on the mailbag, though. I can't believe you have not mentioned this, and I want to hear both of you talk about it. I think the listeners do, too. So, if you're counting, and I know you have not, been this Sunday, it will have been 98 days since we've last seen Tiger Woods take a swing at a golf ball. So Sunday is the Champions for Charity match at nearby, near to me, Hobe Sound, down here in South Florida. Tiger and Peyton Manning against Phil and Tom Brady. best ball match, no spectators, of course, and they're going to raise $10 million for COVID-19 relief efforts. Your comments, golfers.
Well, it's a best ball thing, which protects players. In other words, you can have a crappy hole and pick it up and put it in your pocket, but if your partner plays well, then you can still win the hole. So Tiger's going to have a lot of bad shots probably, but it'll also be spectacular at times too. And it's really to protect Manning and to protect Brady, who can't compete at the same level that Tiger and
both of those guys got handicaps around eight. But, you know, it's not an exciting thing to watch. It's just like this last one we just saw. It's got no meaning to it. If these guys were playing for money like they once did, and they one guy took all $9 million,
right,
that'd be a little bit different. But without a challenge there, without some intensity there, you know, they should just each write a check for $5 million apiece and have a great Sunday.
You know, I agree. I really agree with that. And that's kind of how I look, not to get too deep into it here, about these sports resuming. The season's interrupted. Guys aren't necessarily in shape. Some guys may not play. You're making up a new playoff field. You're changing the rules. You're adding a DH in the basketball. You're gonna expand. It's just not what we accepted as the way it should be. And that's another reason why it was great to watch that match last week, because they still hit the ball great. But you're right, it's not the same thing. Yeah. The drama isn't there. And
I'm sorry. One other quick item in the world of golf. Most of the foreign players are not coming, by the way, because when they get here, they got to spend 14 days in quarantine. And then if they want to go home, they got to spend 14 more days in quarantine. Yeah. So we're going to miss a lot of the top players, including Lee Westwood. He's not coming.
Lee Westwood, I got a kick out of that. Lee Westwood faints at the sight of any major championship. He's never done well on the PGA Tour in the States.
I like to watch the Lee Westwood.
So I was
talking about 25 tournaments he's won.
Yeah. I was going to ask you guys, so after you've just totally destroyed Sunday's golf event, and I don't blame you, I don't disagree with you, are you going to watch? Are you going to watch?
Yeah, I'll watch some of it for sure.
Denny?
It'll be interesting, yeah.
Denny,
I don't know. I'm going to watch something that I'm going to watch, you know, for like 3 days in a row, you know, 15 hours a day, whatever the next thing is on one of the networks, you know. So
you know,
I don't know which one I'm into right now, because they kind of all resemble each other right now.
This one's going to be better than the last, and I'll tell you why. Because you got guys with personalities that are trash talkers.
You're
Phil's
right.
a trash talker. Tiger's a trash talker. Peyton's hilarious. Yep. And Brady will play it up too, whereas these four guys were just too polite last week. Dustin Johnson's not the brightest. Great player, not the brightest, not the most interesting.
Right.
Rory's too polite. He's just a sweet kid. The 21-year-old Matt Wolf isn't going to mess with these guys. He's just a kid. And who was the fourth? Oh, Ricky Fowler is low-key, too.
Nice so kid,
This will be more fun.
You know, if they would let him, if Sunday, if they let him just use any kind of language they want, it would even be funnier.
Yeah. All right, hey, let's talk to one of the great guys in baseball. We all know him and love him. Let's hear from Tommy Brookins. Let's dial him up and get him on the air here. Well, this is just a fact, but Denny McClain says he wasn't even the best player in his family. His Hall of Fame father-in-law, Lou Boudreau, was. And Tom Brookins played 12
I disagree with that, but let Denny say what he wants to say.
Okay. And we played 12 years in the major leagues, Tommy did, at a tiny Mansfield State Teachers College. He wasn't even the best player who went there. Hall of Famer Huey Jennings played 18 years in the majors, starting in 1891, was the winningest manager in Tigers history, 1,100-plus until Sparky surpassed him. Tom Brookins joins us. Tommy, am I factually correct about you and Mansfield State and Huey Jennings and all that?
That's correct, yes. I went to I didn't get recruited a whole lot out of high school, so the coach up there come down to see my brother and I, and to make a long story short, we ended up going to Mansfield State, yes.
Were you going to be a teacher? It's a teacher's college, or did you go there to become a Major League Baseball player?
Well, I went there with the idea to play baseball, I'll be honest, and of course you got to take some schoolwork, you got to do something, so my baseball coach was in elementary education. So we decided that we might have him for a couple classes. So that's what we ended up taking. That's how I ended up with that curriculum, that's it.
Well, Tommy, you sound like you work out in the country someplace, right? I mean, where you live?
I am. I'm in a small town here in Pennsylvania, and it's not exactly back in the sticks, but it's a rural community, yes.
How are you guys handling the epidemic at this point in time? Okay.
Yeah, we are. Early on, we weren't too affected by it, but it has hit our little county pretty hard here lately. And But I've been just been turkey hunting some. You know, I'm an outdoor guy in that respect, and finally got out and played a little golf yesterday for the first time in a long time. But yeah, we're still being cautious, but we're getting out and about a little bit.
When is the When is the last time you got beat by a guy with one bad ankle and one bad knee?
What does that mean?
That was probably yesterday.
Hey, before Bob jumps in, I want to just say, how do you go from Mansfield State College to the number four overall pick in the draft over guys from all across the country? How do they gauge you? You must have hit 700 and fielded 2,000 because you play for this little school. How can they even gauge how good you are when the competition isn't what other guys played against? It's amazing, isn't it? How'd that happen?
Well, Eli, I think what happened was I had a good college career in a Pennsylvania State College Conference, which is really a pretty good conference and competitive. But I played some college summer ball in a league called the Shenandoah Valley League in Virginia. And it, believe it or not, was one of the better college summer leagues at that time for East Coast players. And I played down there for two summers in a little town called Shenandoah, Virginia. And I played very well down there and done very well in two summers down there. And that was heavily scouted by the scouts. And that's really what led me to getting drafted. Plus, I went in the January draft, which is a completely different draft than that June draft. So there's a lot less guys eligible. And to go high is not what you'd call a June draft.
Well, so you mentioned your brother a couple minutes ago going to college with you. A lot of people don't know this, Brookie. You have an identical twin brother named Tim. Both great baseball players. He played pro ball too. You made it to the big leagues. He never played a game in the major leagues. Kind of curious. Now, I have read that you and your brother would sometimes switch identities in spring training, even suiting up in each other's uniforms. And did Tim really play at least one exhibition game as a Detroit Tiger disguised as you?
No.
Really? That is not true. I will say that the other things that he played ball and drafted and signed and played professional ball, but no, he never suited up as me or played a game as me. So I'm going to have to say that rumor is completely false. But he still claims that he had some of my best days. So if you talk to him, he might give you a different story on it.
Well, did you have a rivalry, a competition with each other? And then, of course, tell us what he's doing now.
No, I tell you the truth, we weren't really rival. We were identical twins, but we didn't really have a rival. We got along very well, and he signed with the Texas Rangers, and he was in that same draft, same scenario, went to Mansfield the same as I did. We both went into the draft. I got picked by Detroit. He got taken by Texas. He played a couple years of minor leagues with the Rangers, got the Double-A in the Texas League. Then he actually came over and played with Detroit after getting a release and played 2 years in Montgomery. And when I was in Triple-A, he was playing 2 years in Double-A in the Tiger system at the same time.
I'm glad you brought this up because, you know, you always got along so well. You're easygoing. Everybody liked you. Managers liked you. Players liked you. You didn't make a lot of waves. So at 76 in Montgomery, you're just out of Mansfield State, and you're a shortstop. But tell me if I'm wrong here. They move you to second because Tram, who's 19, comes up the end of the season. You were drafted in 75. He's drafted in 76. Then they move Lou from third to second, and then move you from second to third. Is it true that you kept on getting pushed around the infield because they got these two youngsters coming up that they thought might be better than you?
That's true. I did actually sign in 75. And I played the full season in Montgomery at shortstop. And then the following season, I was moved to second base in 76. And then I played a full season in Montgomery in 76 as a second baseman. And then the next year, I was moved to third base, which was in Evansville, Triple-A, and played that season at third base. So, yes, the idea that I got kept being moved around – probably was because of Tram and Lou. And at that time, of course, no one really knew what they were going to do. We just knew they were good ball players in the minor leagues, kind of the same as I was. But, you know, Eli, one of the greatest things that happened to me was being able to do that, because I had 3 seasons of minor league baseball from the double A and triple A level at different positions. And it just made me a better, more valuable guy to a team when
Eli,
I
want to follow this up. Mm-hmm. I want to follow up your question, Eli. So it's 1985. Tigers are playing against Texas. The game goes into extra innings. Lance gets hurt. He has to leave the game. Now Oakland A's manager Bob Melvin and Marty Castillo, the two backup catchers, had already been out of the game in favor of pinch hitters. So you also caught in the big leagues. You filled that role. You wound up catching 5 innings. The Tigers won the game. You never even caught at the minor league level. What was that like?
It was kind of scary originally, and right, that game was actually played in Tiger Stadium, and they pinch hit for Marty Castillo. Johnny Grubb hit a sacrifice fly in the 10th inning, and that tied the ball game. So when the inning got over, we ran in the dugout, and everyone knew there was no catchers left, and I thought I heard Sparky and Alex Grammas talking, and I could just barely hear him say, who in the heck can we put out there as expendable? And I heard him say, Brookins. Brookins is our man. Send him out there. So I ended up being the guy that went out and caught. And I had never caught before, not even little league, pony league, minor leagues. And you just kind of do it. You're just kind of petrified enough that you get through it. And we ended up winning the game in the 15th inning. So it's always one that I'll remember. It was a different one.
Yeah, so the story's a little bit far-fetched then, because it said you volunteered to catch.
Well, I did. I did volunteer. I think I used to go out and warm up pitchers a lot. I'd even go down to the bullpen and help out, warm up pitchers when guys needed to warm, if we wanted to double barrel, if I wasn't in the lineup or playing. And in between innings, the catcher was getting his gear together, I'd go out and catch guys, and it just kind of became a little bit of a, if we ever got the crunch time, probably throw me out there, that I'm not afraid anyway.
Yeah, how many more, you remember how much more you did catch for the ball club while you were there?
Never caught another game, never did anything. You know, in my career, I played every position in the major league level except pitch. I never got to take the mound, which probably was good. I didn't get to
do
that.
Yeah, probably a very good thing. One thing, I want to read something else to you. When I was doing some work on this yesterday, I said, I looked it up, and one of the great definitions of you, descriptions, is Brookins looked like a Pennsylvania poker. That was a name that Ernie Harwell gave you. He was a stub of a man who choked up and had a short, compact swing. He poked the ball all right. If he hit a home run, it was by accident.
Oh, that's not fair.
Any great power.
That's cruel.
That's probably
I've never
dead
heard
on.
So
and
many
you're right.
Backhanded
Ernie
compliments
was
in my life.
The man that nicknamed me the Pennsylvania Poker, and anything Ernie said, that's okay by me. What a wonderful guy he was. I used to tell Ernie, you're the most amazing person. How can you sit there and watch the exhibition that we just put on and make it look like we knew what the heck we were doing? I said, you're tremendous. He was quite a guy.
Now here we go. So you get called up to the majors on July 10th, 1979, and you get a hit off Jeff Zahn, your first at bat. You play in Minnesota. Then immediately you go to Chicago for a 4-game series, whatever it is, against the Cubs. So you're brand new. You're one day in the major leagues. Now, 59,000 are packed into Comiskey Park for the disco demolition. There you are, Steve Dahl, my old pal from WABX. Now he's in Chicago, the anti-disco movement. So I wanted you to, before you tell about that experience, because we did a story about 20 years ago, you were hilarious. Anyway, listen to Dahl, Sox color commentator Jim Pearsall and owner Bill Veeck as everyone was freaked out of what was going on the field.
Jimmy went nuts.
This is now officially the world's largest anti-disco rally.
Jimmy Pearsall back at the ballpark, and I'm sure glad, and I hope they don't let you people see what's going on here at Comiskey Park. One of the saddest sights I've ever seen in a ballpark in my life. This garbage of demolishing a record has turned into a fiasco.
This is Belbeck. Please clear the park or we'll have to call off the game and close the park.
Well, of course, they did call off the game. And so you're sitting there and you're saying, you know, just describe the scene, especially the part with Rose.
Small town boy from Pennsylvania in Chicago now at the beginning of his career.
Tell us about that night, Tommy.
It was one of the most unbelievable things I think I've witnessed in baseball. I mean, not like you said, it's my first major league road trip ever. I mean, I just came up a couple days before, the day before. So I'm thinking, man, this Major League Baseball is really wild up here. This is really something. But it, of course, was a doubleheader, and they blew up the records in center field between games. And it took us a while to play the first game because all these albums were sailing across the field. You know, every minute or something, there was a frisbee coming across there that was some album. And Rosie, actually, one caught him right Bill on the cap. It might have cut his head off if it hadn't hit his bill. But it was when they blew them records up, when he came around there on a Jeep and they had that big giant crate of records out in center field and that explosion went off. We were all sitting in the dugout watching because it was pretty amazing. And when that blew up, I mean, everything just went bonkers. People just started piling on the field. They were jumping off the dugout roof right as we in front of us going right onto the field by the tens and 50, 100 people just jumping at a time. And it was total mayhem. And finally, the security there said, you boys better get back into the locker room. This thing has gotten out of control. We feel that your safety could be at risk. So we all went back into the locker room and we hung around back there and we kept kind of getting updates and peeking out and seeing what was going on, and it certainly wasn't getting any better. It was bizarre. And Sparky kept talking with the umpires would come by every now and then, and he'd say, hold on, man, we're just in limbo here. And finally Sparky come back in one time and said, boys, you might as well shower. There will be no more second game. He said, we're out of here. And that was the end of it.
One of the other things that's pretty consistent through all this stuff I read yesterday was you never had a clean uniform. You could go from the clubhouse to the dugout to third base and be filthy.
Well, I think there might be some truth in that. It made it look like I was doing something, I guess. You know, well, said he's dirty again. He must have done something. But it was a good run for me. I enjoyed my time in Detroit. I was lucky to be drafted by the Tigers in a time where they were looking for players. We had a tremendous group of guys in the minor leagues that all seemed to come up in that late 70s, early 80s era right there. And I think that was special when we won it in 84 because so many of us had been drafted and come up through the system together, and then we got to see the benefit of a world championship.
And yet you had three postseason appearances with the Tigers, and you went a combined 0-18. What happened? Were you just pressing too much in the postseason?
You know, that always seemed to be my problem as a player. My ability to hit for average and consistently keep something going. I was a very streaky hitter. When I got it going, I could be good for a couple of weeks. And when I got it going the wrong way, I was pretty bad for a couple of weeks. So, I think you press some. I there's no question about it. And certainly when I look back on my career, I would say the offensive part of it, the batting, was probably the thing I struggled the most with, to be consistent. And I do regret to this day never getting a hit in the playoffs. It haunts me at night sometimes.
Wow.
You know, I want to
me too, by the way. I never had a hit in the playoffs.
But here's the thing, Tommy. You were there for the Tigers for 10 years. Every year there was another guy that was going to take your place. And it went year after year after year. This is a classic. It's an 84. I looked it up. Evans played 14 games at third. Castillo, 14. Garbay, 14. You played 22. Of course, you got hurt there. Hojo played 98. But here's what I want you to listen to, because you did get up against Kansas City. And here's what here's what Al Michaels said about you and that when you came to the plate in that game.
And we'll take a look at Tommy Brookins. Tigers have really never settled their third base spot all season long, but it hasn't hurt. Brookins has been there. Sparky contends that Howard Johnson is his guy for next season. He had Marty Castillo starting there last night. He had Evans starting there tonight.
Fact is, there was also Garbay, and the fact is, Hojo got traded. And of all those guys, you were the starter in 85 and were for the next 3 years. So you must have really, besides how hard it is to play the game, it must have bothered you because every year there was somebody else, whether it was Chris Pitaro or whatever, was going to take your place.
Well, there always was somebody else, and I think that comes back to a little bit of what I just talked about, and the fact that I never put big numbers up offensively. Had I, driven in 80 runs and put up numbers like that, they would have never had to go and look for somebody else. So I think on the fact that I was valuable kept me around. I could play anywhere. I could play all the positions. And when something didn't go good with someone, then they always felt that I was a kind of an insurance policy. But I look on it realistically and just say, hey, I was still happy. I was part of the team. I was still on the team. But if I could have put numbers up a little better offensively, I felt that they would have never had to really search.
Well, we're talking a lot about Sparky here, and a bunch of your teammates really did not like him and didn't get along with him very well. The one thing we haven't asked you, what did you think of Sparky and how did you get along with him?
You came up at the same time, both in the spring of 79. Go ahead.
Well, you're right. I came up right not long after Sparky. I think he became the manager in May, I want to say, something like that.
Yep,
and
yep.
I got called up in July, so it was Ernie few short months after I got called up. So I immediately thought Sparky must be a genius. This guy's a genius getting me to the big leagues like this. So, but you know what? One of the things that I got along great with Sparky, I loved playing for Sparky. People say, well, he kept trying to find other people like we just talked about, but you know what? That's really him and I had a great relationship. When I first came up, he came to me and he said, Thomas, he always called me Thomas. You know, Thomas, I don't know how long you're going to be up here. He said, if you play hard, you never know. You might be here for 10 years. And I said, yeah, I guess we don't know. But he said, I'm going to ask one thing of you. And he said, that's to give me 100% every day you take the field. And if you do that, you and I will get along fine and we'll never have a problem. And that's exactly what I tried to do. But
Tommy,
I loved Sparky. I enjoyed playing for him. He treated me great. I had terrible games. I had terrible stretches. I had times when I was thinking, what in the world is going on? And he never come in and said anything bad. He was always in my corner. I can't say enough good things about him.
Tommy, you don't know what a bad game is till your ERA goes above 6.
I made 4 errors in one game one day, but
that's the all-time major league record you share with I think 21 other guys, most errors in one game.
Tommy, I'll give you one better. When I pitch against Baltimore one night in Baltimore at damn ballpark, I gave up a home run to Kurt Bleffery, Johnson led off the game. Then Bleffery came up, he hit a home run on the second pitch. And then Boog came up and hit a home run on the fourth pitch. So don't tell me about having bad nights. That was a bad start. In fact, I never even got.
That is a slow start there. Yeah, that's a slow start.
And you know how hot and humid it was in Baltimore? Hell, I never even got a chance to sweat that night.
Well, I had plenty of bad days, and I will say this. We did win that game. I had 4 errors in because everybody on the other team was trying to hit the ball down to me, and it messed up their swing enough that we ended up scoring and winning the game. So somehow I took credit for that.
Now Tommy, you got along great with Sparky, and Jim Leland loved you also. He managed you in the minor leagues. So the ball club brings you back after 17 years. You left in 88. You come back to manage in the minor leagues in 2005, Class A. Then 2007, you leave West Michigan to the championship of Class A. You're here as a coach from 09 to 13. And when it's time to select you as manager and Leland wanted you to replace him, Dombrowski goes out and hires Brad Ausmus. What was that like? Was that a terrible disappointment? And did you feel that something that should have been yours was taken away from you?
That was a joke.
I don't think it should have been mine, no. I think I would have loved to have had the opportunity to be interviewed. And I did, whenever Jim retired and the rest of us coaching staff, we were in limbo, who might get brought back and who might not. But I talked with Dave real briefly, and he just said that, hey, I said, I know you're going to be looking for a new manager. If you think I might be your man, I'm up for the challenge. And he said, well, we'll be in touch. We know what you can do. And that was the last I ever heard from him. Hmm. So that was it.
Do you think maybe...
Are you bitter about that, Tom?
Yeah.
Not really. You know, I didn't look at it as the job should have been mine. I mean, I just looked at it as, hey, I'm a candidate, I think, but obviously they felt they wanted to go a different direction. There was other guys. Lloyd McClendon was there, Gene Lamont. So there was other guys that were there who were also valuable candidates and really didn't get much of a look either.
Well, I mean, your personality seems so laid back. You talk like you're so laid back. You're so easygoing. You ever been mad at anybody?
Come on.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I've gotten upset, I guess, at times but I try to be an easygoing guy and not get too excited about things, but, just part of my makeup, I guess, you know. You talked about, my twin brother, you know, and him never getting to the big leagues and only getting to AA. And you know what, when I look back, I think, in the back of my mind, I understood how lucky I was to actually make it and be there, that I had a brother that was, I felt just as good as I was. He didn't make it. It's the way life goes. And I always felt like, hey, why are you complaining? Or why are you mad? You're lucky that you are where you are. So I always felt that way.
You were a very popular player in Detroit. I tweeted out your appearance on our show, and so many fans said, God, I love Tom Brookins, the quintessential Detroit Tiger. But just before the 1989 season started, the Tigers traded you to the Yankees. Now, I'd just gotten to New York the previous fall. Remember this? I walk into the Yankees locker room on opening day 89. I went right over to see you and said, Brookie, what are we doing here? So what was it like for you to play with the Yankees and then finish your career the next season with the Indians?
It was a little bit of a shock to get traded. There wasn't really very long left in that 89 spring training. I think there was less than a week to go. And I got to the ballpark one day, and it was raining a little bit, and we were to go over to Plant City, I think, and play the Reds. And we're just standing around hanging out, waiting to go. And Dick Trzewski comes up and says, Sparky wants to see you in his office. I said, okay. And I went in, and he just said, sit down. And he just went, we just traded you to the Yankees for Charlie Hudson. And I just went, wow, well, okay. And, you know, that's the nature of the game, I guess. I wasn't really wowed about being traded, but I just figured, well, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go. The Yankees they're not in their heyday or anything. So if they want me, then I'm happy to go. Sparky wished me well and appreciated all the years I gave him. And I said, thanks a lot. I feel the same way. And I said, I hope you guys finish second this year, one game behind the Yankees, is what I told him. And he laughed, and I walked out the door. It was different. It was kind of a different atmosphere. It was hard to imagine being away from the Tigers, but hey, you know, you just move on as a player. You just, we didn't do exactly anything strong in New York, and I certainly didn't. I got hurt that year and missed almost the second half of the season, so it didn't really go good for me in New York. Dallas Green was a manager. He got fired in August. They brought Bucky Dent in to be the finish up as a manager, and then the end of the season, I ended up asking for, or they decided they probably weren't going to invite me back. So I said, why don't you just release me? And they said, okay. And Cleveland called right away and said, we're looking for a good utility man. And I said, I'm your guy. And I went and signed with them, played the next year in 1990, and then retired at the end of the season.
Well, let me remind people, when you get traded in spring of 89, The Tigers had won the division in 87, as we all know. Frank Donato, we had on recently pitched that last game. 88, they were okay. They won 88 games. In 89, the bottom fell out. They lost over 100 games. That was the year that Sparky had the nervous breakdown. He couldn't take the losing. So you didn't miss anything not being here in 89, where I think they went through over 100 players. It was the most ridiculous thing you've ever seen. Now, I know you didn't have a great year in New York, but I just want to remind people that being here in 89 would have been no treat for anybody wearing a Tiger uniform. My last question for you, and I brought this up to every guy who played with him, Alan Trammell is in the Hall of Fame. Lou Whitaker is not. My theory is that they were essentially the same player, but Alan was friendly with the media. He was comfortable. And Lou was a little socially awkward and shy, not his fault, just the way he was. And my feeling is that that's what the difference is. He didn't endear himself to sports writers. He was viewed as aloof, even though he really wasn't. He was shy. Do you agree with that? Is that why else would not Lou Whitaker be in the Hall of Fame and Alan Trammell is?
Eli, I agree with that 100%. I do. They were the same guy. I mean, Lou and Tram both, certainly both deserving to be Hall of Famers. And your assessment of Lou, I'd say that's very true. He was to himself a lot more, and I think that's what's cost him to not be in the Hall of Fame right now.
Yeah.
Well, Tom, hey, Brookie, what are you doing now? Are you officially retired from baseball, or are you looking to get back in?
He's cutting wood.
No, I'm officially retired. I've been out now since 2013 was my last year, so nothing to do in professional baseball since then, and quite honestly, no real desire to. I'm enjoying being retired here, and I stay busy golfing and hunting, and I got a grandson that I've helped coach his travel baseball team some. And so I just stay busy and I'm enjoying it.
All right. I got a question for you. This will be the last one. I think, tell me your mom and dad didn't name you after the McLean family. All right. My brother's name was Tim. My dad's name was
right?
Tom. And my middle name is Dale. That's all McLean's.
No kidding. Well, I don't know. That would be a good question to put to them. I don't know. I'll have to wait, and when I see them up in heaven, I'll ask them that. Right.
Well, God bless you.
And lastly, Tommy, when I did a show with Gibby some years ago, we went pheasant hunting, and pheasants were pretty easy to shoot because they were slow, although I kept on missing. It seems to me that a turkey, I mean, that's like they stand still. What's the challenge of shooting a turkey?
The challenge is getting him close enough into you without him seeing you or you being dumb enough to give yourself away. That really is the challenge. If you're a good caller, you may be able to get him in there close enough, but their eyesight is unbelievable. So you have to get him close enough to shoot. That's
well, you call him. Do you have a turkey whistle or do it yourself?
You say, here, over here.
I got different turkey calls, you know. Some work, some don't, but that's in the spring when you're going after the male, the gobbler. You're trying to call him into you and pretend.
How
like
do you do that? Give me an
turkey,
example.
And he's going to come over and check you out.
What do you say? Gobble, gobble, gobble?
Well, actually, you're going to do more like a hen. You want to pretend. You want to be the woman. You want to be the hen. So he wants to come over and check you out.
He does that well.
Hey, Tommy, great talking.
One second. Tommy, I got to tell you, the greatest thing I've read about you the last couple of days is this. Somebody anonymously said, Tommy, he came to play every day and never bitched for a moment. That's the kind of player everybody wants.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Hey, Brookie, just one more thing from me. I want to talk about another backwoods hunter from another thriving metropolis in your state of Pennsylvania, Meadville, who went to Thiel College. You in touch with Lynn Jones at all? Another great guy.
Oh, Jones.
I do. I keep in touch with Lynn. Yes. He is up in the Meadville, Conneautville area outside of Erie, and we speak not a lot, but we speak every couple months, touch base with him, and great guy. As a matter of fact, when I told you about playing in the Shenandoah Valley League that helped me get drafted, Lynn and I played together on that team in Shenandoah is where we first met, clean back then.
Wow. Do you chat with Lance or Jack or any of the guys?
I haven't talked with either of them in a while. I don't, really pick up the phone and call them too much, but every now and then we'll bump into each other in something that we're doing together. So, but yeah, every now and then I'll talk to them.
Great catching up with you, Tommy. Great. Really appreciate it. Thanks for the time. A lot of fun. I'm sure our listeners are going to love this, and appreciate you spending time with us, and we'll keep in touch.
Tommy, thanks. Have a great day.
Thanks, guys.
Stay safe.
It's been my pleasure.
Right. Thanks, Brookie.
Bye-bye.
Wow.
What a good time. Danny asked a good question about the dirty uniform thing, and Brookie answered it with the truth. Yeah. I did some stuff. You know what? He was one of the most acrobatic third basemen I ever saw.
Yeah.
He was so wiry. He's so quick. But the thing is, he'd make some amazing plays. Then later in the game, he just might let a routine grounder go past him. His range factor at the top of the American League pretty much every year, and we discussed this before, most errors in the American League pretty much to the top every year.
Yeah, well, he was obviously not a great hitter, as he admitted, but he was a wizard with the glove most times, as you also pointed out.
And they love playing with him. That's, he's the perfect teammate. He really is. That's what he sounds like, the perfect teammate.
I enjoyed what a group. And anyway, I don't want to get waxed too philosophic.
We got to wish everybody a happy weekend, a safe and happy weekend now, don't we?
All right. We'll see you again on Monday. Thanks for joining us for another edition of the No Filter Podcast.
Play safe. Thanks, everybody. Play safe.